From Carol McKinney Public Media in Oviedo, Florida.
45 years ago, 19-year-old draftees were sent to fight a guerrilla war in Vietnam. Today, young volunteers in Humvees fight terrorists in Iraq and Afghanistan. Two wars, two generations of young Americans deployed to battle on the other side of the world. I'm Desta Horner, and the Vietnam War lasted from 1965 to 1975, during which more than 58,000 Americans were killed in action. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have also lasted 10 years, but with one-tenth the number of casualties, 5,700. But the impact on the troops in any war is achingly similar. What does one generation say to the other about the experience of combat and the return home? Two Seminole County veterans, John Blackwelder and John Malone, share their memories of the Vietnam War and their advice to the young warriors who are returning to the United States from Iraq and Afghanistan. In 1966, John Blackwelder was a 19-year-old from Cincinnati, Ohio, about to be drafted. He joined the Air Force and spent 18 months fighting in Southeast Asia.
First night I got there, there were rockets and mortars and infiltrators on the base. Luckily, they didn't kill any of us, but we killed five of them. That was my first hour in Vietnam. Right then I knew, well, this is going to be a long year.
Do you see any similarities between that first night and the subsequent 365 nights and what the soldiers are going through in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, yeah, I see similarities in the fact that we were considered in a guerrilla warfare. They're considered in a terrorist warfare, but they're very similar. The only difference is the guerrillas have more guts than the terrorists. Terrorists won't face you. They'll take a cell phone and blow up a bomb from a mile away when they see you drive by it. At least the guerrillas will give you a good fight. They may sneak around the jungle and dig tunnels and come up underneath or behind you or what have you, but at least they'll fight you face to face. Terrorists won't do that. They're gutless. I call them the cockroaches of the human race. And they'll kill children. They'll kill anybody. Vietnam, especially in the jungle, you could be standing 10 feet away from me in the jungle, so dense I couldn't see you. So naturally, you could get killed pretty easy. Plus, they could hide, so ambushes and attacks were pretty common. Of course, over in Afghanistan and places like that, there is no cover from what I've seen of the terrain. The difference is the Vietnam War for 10 years, they had it. They shoved it down the Americans' throat. The media did every night. They showed on TV people getting shot, blown up, body bags, so on and so forth. The government did learn their lesson from that. If you'll notice in this Afghan thing, pretty much all they ever show is a distant smoke something or GIs riding in a Humvee or walking next to a road with a gun. They don't show any action because, like the Vietnam War, they don't want the public getting involved or getting upset.
Do you think the public in the United States doesn't have a real picture?
No, they don't. Of course they don't. They have no idea what it's like. Sure, we got enough of our own problems right now that nobody pays attention unless it's a guy that's been in combat. Then he knows what's going on. But there's no way for an American in this country and live so well to even realize the discomforts. A GI in Vietnam lived a lot worse than the poor in the United States, or even the homeless, because of the temperature, the insects, the bugs, the malaria, the intense heat. Monday was malaria day. You took your big brown malaria pill. Every day you took your salt pills, your mucous membranes like your lips, around your eyes, your nose, would turn chalk white where the salt came out. And the first week you were in a place like that, it was just sick. Now, the deserts over there have their kind of heat, too, and cold.
So it's not just the combat. It's that everyday life, that struggle of every day.
Right. I noticed when I, first day I was there, they had a water cooler. I looked at it and thought, wasn't that nice to have iced tea in a water cooler? But at a closer look, that wasn't iced tea. As a color of the water. Little things moving in it. I don't know what they were, but a lot of dysentery. If you got a scratch, it got infected within hours. It's just a lot of discomfort, physical discomfort.
Did you drink in Vietnam, even though you were under 21?
Oh, yeah. In Vietnam, they made sure you had liquor. All the liquor was $1 a bottle, whether it was Chivas Regal or Rotgut. And it was a 40-ounce bottle, imperial quart. We called them 40-pounders. You didn't really have beer because you didn't have refrigeration. You had liquor, plenty of it. Our food supply was 1947 sea rations, and they seemed to have an abundance of one lima beans and powdered eggs. And to this day, I can't eat either one of them. It was pretty disgusting. Three of us were poisoned shortly after I got there, and I lost 100 pounds in 40 days. But the other two fellas, they died within 3 days. And then I had stomach problems with diarrhea and that for 3 years. Then when I got out, or was getting out, they sent me to the VA to get this checked out. And in typical military fashion, they gave me 10% disability for my feet. You know, that's the military. And now I'm paid 70% disability for the effects of Agent Orange, which have given me type 2 diabetes, coronary heart disease, but no cancers as of to date. Of course, you don't know that when you're 19 or 20 and you think you're Superman.
John Malone was a career officer in the U.S. Army. At 28, he was 10 years older than John Blackwelder when he served 18 months in Vietnam in 1966. He commanded American troops in the field and was also an advisor working with the Vietnamese Army. He describes his life in combat.
Well, I will tell you what it's like in combat. It is hours and hours of boredom, interrupted with abject terror for a few seconds. It's just something just happens, you know, wham, and something starts going. And then the funny part was I was watching that movie, Saving Private Ryan, and that first thing when they hit Omaha Beach. And these people just running around, trying to... That's the way it is. You're not scared. You're running. You're shooting, maybe. But boy, when it's all over and you sit down and think of what might have happened to you, bud, you just want to fall apart. Yes.
And then you've got the hours to think about what happened.
Oh, yeah. You may pick out things I did. Well, I'm not going to do that again, you know. If I did something that didn't work out too well, I said, well, I won't do that again. And the people about Captain Down, they're the ones that fight the wars. Every once in a while, you know, some battalion commanders, but not often. It's guys down at the bottom. And everybody for themselves, really. That's what it is. If you were the commanding officer, you're supposed to see what you could do about the thing. And sometimes I could, and sometimes I couldn't really make any sense out of anything. The people you're with, your platoon, your company, your squad, whatever it is, those are the people you work with, and those are the people you take care of. And a lot of people don't understand that. They're not fighting for whatever the big thing is. We're fighting to stay alive here, folks. And if we can do the thing that we need to do, we'll do it.
When Afghan and Iraq vets come back, do they feel like heroes?
Well, I think they probably do.
Because they survived.
I think they are. They survived. They went over there and they served. They didn't run to Canada or hide out.
Returning home after being in country for 18 months brought a whole new time of adjustment for these veterans. First John Blackwelder and then John Malone described their experience of returning to civilized society.
Well, first off, I was, you know, kissed the earth when I got off the plane in Los Angeles. But I noticed that the whole country was mad about the war, and unfortunately, they were mad at anybody in a uniform, as if we wanted to do that and wanted to go put our life on the line for a year and forced to defend yourself by killing others and so on. We were kids, teenagers. The American people, they looked at us like it was our fault, not like our fathers from World War II, we weren't shown any respect at all. And in fact, you could feel the disdain for any GI in uniform. had nobody to talk to except other vets. And also, they didn't have any programs like they do now. So you just did your time, came back, and then que sera, that was it.
Well, the guys that served with you, did you talk to them, and do you continue to talk to them today?
Well, let me explain. When I came back, you're given 30 days leave after a year. I got home because I was one of the first in my high school and in my suburb and community, of the first to go and come back successfully. Others went with me, were killed in action. But so my classmates and all threw a big party for me, and I was very uncomfortable. But they were looking at me like I was going to freak out at any time and shoot some baby or something. So I told my parents, I got to go. I'll come home on leave when I get adapted to the U.S. again. And oddly enough, I went on to my base, and all the guys I served with were there. It was the same reaction. They were very uncomfortable. They didn't feel they were ready to fit into civilization, civilized people. At that time, you weren't allowed to be proud of serving your country. So we said goodbye, and that was 40-some years ago. I haven't talked to one of them since. The difference between the veterans now are these are career guys. We were drafted, told them, well, you go to Vietnam or you go to jail. Draftees are not treated like volunteers. We were just a piece of flesh for the military. These guys that are serving nowadays are different. They're making a career out of it. So they will be in that military cocoon for at least 20 years.
Do you believe there is such a thing as post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yes. You can't stop your mind like a recorder from replaying what happened to you and what you saw. Let's put it this way. War is a disgusting thing for humans to do. That's what I mean about leaving a war zone where people are being blown up and body parts laying around, and then come back to the United States and go to a Christmas party and say, hey, how you doing?
Coming back from Vietnam, and I was going to spend a little time in San Francisco. I was in uniform, and I was walking. And this one guy, he had this sign, and baby rapers or something, and he's giving it to me like that. And I told him, I said, you know, you've got two choices here. You can either get out of my way or peel your ass off that wall there. And the policeman who was standing there, he looked at the policeman, and the policeman looked at him and said, I'd move if I were you, buddy.
And how did your family react when you arrived back?
Well, they were really glad. My dad kept up with the war while I was over there and all that. My family was always very, very supportive of me.
When you've been in an atmosphere of war and shooting, when you come back, do you have a tendency to want to revert to using force?
No. It's the last thing I ever wanted to do. Most of what I remembered now is the funny parts, when we were laughing about something like that. But the people who were killed in my unit and the people I killed, they'll never go away. I think it's permanent. Don't get me wrong, I'm not sad all the time about it or anything. I went over there to fight a war, and I found out what fighting a war meant, and I don't want to go do it anymore. You know, and that's why when they said, you may get another promotion if you go back to Vietnam, and I said, I don't care. I don't want to do that. Nuh-uh, not me. I have guns in the house. I don't want to ever use them again, but I have them. I will defend, but I don't want to do that anymore. That doesn't register good with me.
Like John Malone, John Blackwelder carries his memories of the war.
I won't say the memories fade. The frequency of returning to your conscience does. Vietnam, like other tragedies in your life or a war scene or situation or experience, kind of scabs over. Tender, but covers over. Or it goes to a little corner of your mind that you have the key to open if you want to. But it's not bothering you. It's not waking you up at night. It's not other things reminding you of it. I won't say I didn't gain experiences and how to handle some things in life. I mean, I learned to handle death, which helped me handle the loss of my only child that was killed by a drunk driver. that's unfortunate. You got to go to that school, let's say, to help you out. But the cards are dealt. You got to play the hand out.
When an Iraqi or an Afghan veteran returns now and somebody says, it's all right, I know what you're feeling, are those the kinds of words that are helpful, are meaningful?
Well, it depends on who it comes from. If you're saying it comes from a vet that's been through it, been back here a couple of years or whatever, yeah, that means something. A civilian, a doctor, whatever, you're going, yeah, right, what do you know? You can't tell a nice, comfortable American what a war's like, what starving or being shot at or whatever. Yeah, our days went by, we didn't eat because we didn't have any food and didn't have any way of getting any. Pinned down or whatever, no water, just very inconvenient.
Inconvenient's an interesting word.
Yeah.
These veterans of the Vietnam War have suggestions for the young veterans of the current wars when they return home. John Malone urges families to recognize problems and take action. John Blackwelder holds out the hand of comfort to the young returnees.
Well, you know, if he's changed, you knew him when he was home. If he's changed, they're not happy-go-lucky when they have these things. They'll be downcast, drinking, not motivated, I guess, it's to do anything. If that's not the way they were when they left, they need some help. Not the family. The family's help doesn't usually turn out to be real good. They need to go see somebody who's trained to see what's going on. If you can't seem to get yourself together, go to the VA. Or if you're in the service, you can go to that service. But if you're not in the service anymore, go to the VA. You can get a lot of stuff there, including money and everything else, and medical care, and both sides, you know, mental and physical and all that. The thing is, I tell people, if somebody in the VA doesn't tell you what you need to know, then go get somebody else. There are people that are not very good, and there are people that are real good. But just don't take one person's opinion. If it doesn't sound good to you, go find somebody else. You'll meet people who are there too, and they've been in where you've been maybe, or someplace similar. It makes you feel like you're not alone anymore. Nobody should be isolated. You've been in a war, such as the war that it is. You have help. You have people that are waiting here for you. You know, it may not be your family, but go and see. Get yourself squared away. You're still alive, so it can't be too bad.
I'd first tell him where I served, so he understood we've both been in the same boat, so to speak. And as far as that part of it, all I would do is offer him, because I've been through it, that if he needed to talk to somebody anytime, feel free to call me or come see me. But that's about all you can do. You're not going to tell another person what they're in store for. But I would advise them, unlike, don't take it inside. Go see somebody, let it out, where it's a friend, a clergyman, a professional psychiatrist, paid for by the VA or active military. Don't let it eat at you, because you were just doing your job. It wasn't personal.
We've posted pictures of John Blackwelder and John Malone on the CMF website, along with their extended interviews. We've also included links to other websites offering information related to this feature. Should you wish to comment on this podcast, we have provided an online process for you to offer your reaction. And you might also wish to email a link to this feature to someone who would value hearing it. If you wish to contact CMF Media, click on the Contact tab and send us an email. While at the website, we encourage you to visit our archive section for more stories about the people, politics, and history of our community. And while you're there, consider subscribing to the program content using the RSS feature we provide for your feed reader, or subscribe using iTunes. Once subscribed, you will be alerted immediately to each new feature we produce and post. You may prefer to subscribe to CMF's free e-letter so that we may keep you up to date on new programs as they are posted. Or stay in touch by following CMF on Twitter or Facebook. CMF Public Media is a nonprofit, publicly supported charity. Information about CMF is available on the homepage of the website. For CMF Public Media, This is Desta Horner.
Support for Carol McKenney Public Media is made possible in part with funding from Edith Bush Charitable Foundation, recognized for creating innovative civic solutions that help people help themselves, and by the Friends of Carol McKenney, who encourage you to make a tax-deductible gift in support of the programming activities of Carol McKenney Foundation for Public Media. You may give online at cmfmedia.org, where you may also see a complete list of those friends in the donor section of the website. This podcast is a presentation of Carol McKenney Foundation for Public Media, Incorporated. Visit cmfmedia.org for more information.